This is The Drive with Josh Graham podcast.
We are killing it online.
Tune into The Drive weekday afternoons 3 to 7 on WSJS.
We welcome you to a Wednesday drive. It's WSJS, News Talk Sports for the Triad. But there's a lot going on this afternoon. The Carolina Panthers just finished practice without Ike Ekwonu. Not a great sign. 4 days before the opener, Dave Canales just now meeting with the media. Perhaps we can get to some of that shortly. Bill Belichick met with the media as well today. That was a couple hours ago. And let's actually start with his Tar Heels. One way or another, North Carolina's response to the TCU disaster Monday, their response this weekend could define the entire season. Because there is quite a bit stacked up against this Tar Heel team right now. Not only is it a 5-day turnaround, which is pretty quick, and your competition, Charlotte, has had 8 days to prepare since its opening loss to Appalachian State. Not only is it Bill Belichick's first college road game, it also happens to be the first time the University of North Carolina, our state's flagship school, is facing Charlotte on its campus. Even without Belichick, this game, for a while now, has been circled as the biggest football game in the history of Charlotte. The history of Charlotte 49er football, this is the biggest game. Now, Charlotte has only been an FBS program for a dozen to 15 years, but having North Carolina visit your stadium, not Bank of America Stadium, Jerry Richardson Stadium, and to have Bill on the other sideline, and oh yeah, by the way, your quarterback spent the previous 2 years as a Tar Heel, Connor Harrell? Goodness. The expression, this is fill-in-the-blanks Super Bowl, doesn't fully capture the meaning for the 49ers. The concern for North Carolina lies with Bill's ability and willingness to pick up and motivate college players. It didn't dawn on me until the game actually kicked off, but in all my years covering the Panthers and the NFL, I'd never covered a Bill Belichick game. Never seen Bill coach a game in person. And what struck me was, he doesn't interact with his assistants. He doesn't interact with his players pretty much the entire game. He's standing 10, 15 yards away. Every time there was a key penalty or a big play, I'd look straight at Bill to see how he's reacting, and he's not. Same stoic, stone face response. We saw it when ESPN cameras panned to him on the touchdown, and again, not reacting at all. And there seems to be purpose with that. And in the NFL, these are hired guns. In the NFL, you get the top 1% of athletes, regardless if you're the worst team in the NFL or the best team. That's why coaching, it really matters. Games are decided on the margins, so every schematic advantage you can get from your coaching makes all the difference in the world. In college, it's completely different. It's not the same deal at all. In college, you kind of need your coach to interact. You kind of need your coach to build you up, to motivate you. With these younger guys, Bill's going to talk about the noise on the outside. I'll just drown out the noise. It doesn't help us. Control what we can control. All that. And he does that. You have to do what he's done as long as he has successfully. These players, though, they've never dealt with that. They've never dealt with anything like yesterday, where the entire sports world is talking about you and mocking you and laughing at you. Easy to say, easier said than done for 18, 19-year-olds who've lived most of their life on Instagram and TikTok to just say, oh, put that away, it doesn't matter. So can a 73-year-old adapt at all in building up this team? And will North Carolina look like they're interested and motivated to play Charlotte? That is the story. Strangely enough, this game became so much more interesting, game two, because of how game one went. Short week, how motivated are you going to look facing a team that's going to play like this is the most important game of their lives? North Carolina, a 13.5 point favorite, by the way. Either way, Saturday could be pivotal. If Carolina wins impressively, well, it should launch them to a 3-1 start. If you win this game impressively, you're going to win at home against Richmond, and you probably beat a bad UCF team in Orlando. You're probably 3-1 going into the Clemson game off a bye. If they lose, you can call it a season. You could call this an unmitigated disaster. If you're 0-2 and you lose to Charlotte, unmitigated disaster. So here was some of Bill talking about facing those challenges heading on the road.
We take the approach we can, you know, play anywhere, anytime, you know, day, night, you know, home away in a parking lot, and in Ireland, in North Carolina, in California, wherever it is. Just, you know, we got to be ready to play when the games are scheduled. We'll control what we can control.
Mm-hmm. Gio Lopez, quote, looks pretty good today, according to Bill. But they're practicing as we speak right now. This was before they started their afternoon practice. They did not practice yesterday, the day after an 8 o'clock game. That's understandable. We are streaming video on YouTube and Twitch. However, and wherever you're listening or watching, greatly appreciate that. Will Dalton is the executive producer of today's show. Officer and Gentleman, your movie this week. Next week, in honor of a Leo DiCaprio, Paul Thomas Anderson movie, one battle after another dropping. We got options, Leo and PTA movies, Blood Diamond, The Revenant, Boogie Nights, and Magnolia. Those are the four options for this week. Will Dalton, do you have a preference? Not that it matters, but do you?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I think I'm pulling for Magnolia. May or may not be because Tom Cruise is in it.
Mm-hmm.
But, I wouldn't be upset with Boogie Nights either.
That would be an interesting movie for us to try to talk about on
this
show.
That's why I want to see it.
Shifting things. While the NFL is going to command so much of the national interest, beginning tomorrow with Eagles-Cowboys, that's a game that you can listen to on WSJS, there is a local college football game, a game being played in our backyard that might quietly be one of the marquee matchups across the country this week. Also another game you can listen to on WSJS. That is Duke hosting Brett Bielema and Illinois Saturday at Wallace Wade. And here's the case. Well, before we get to Duke, Illinois, let's look everywhere else. In college football week one, mostly because there's no conflict with the NFL, give us as many good games as you can before the NFL starts, there were countless ranked showdowns. You had three top 10 matchups alone. In week two, there's just one ranked game across the entire country. That is number 15, Michigan, visiting 18th ranked Oklahoma and Norman. John Mateer. We'll see if he has money on this game or not. Saw that our friend Chip Patterson calls him Moneyline Mateer. Like that. Jake Dickert's former quarterback at Washington State, now at Wazoo or at Oklahoma. You look at other games, Iowa State, that's a rivalry. Okay. Oklahoma State, Oregon. Huh? This one stands out. South Florida embarrassed Boise State opening night of week one. Their next game, Gainesville. They're playing Florida, top 15 matchup. So we'll see how legit South Florida is when they face the Gators. That could be good fun. But then you have Duke and Illinois. And this is the case for the Blue Devils and the Illini. Illinois is 11th ranked in the most recent AP poll. That is the highest ranking for Illinois football in close to 25 years. 2001 or 2002, the last time that Illinois was ranked this high. Duke is coming off a 9-win season. 9 wins in 2 of the last 3 years, of course.
9 times.
Year 2 for Manny Diaz, and Manny Diaz has one of the best transfer quarterbacks in America. Darion Mensah from Tulane to Duke, and in his debut, started slow, missed the deep bomb touchdown. Duke was tied with Elon at halftime, 10-10, but as Darion Mensah goes, Duke goes, and in the second half, he lit it up, so Duke won by 28. 3 touchdowns, no picks, 389 yards passing for Darion Mensah. Because of this light slate, Duke, they're getting a prime window for this. It is after the first Lee Corso-less college game day on Saturday morning. This is what it leads into. Noon game, ESPN, national TV window at Wallace Wade Stadium for Duke in Illinois, a sneaky marquee game. App State head coach Dow Loggins is now with us. App home opener this weekend coming up against Lindenwood. Coach, the last time you visited with us, you were telling us about the prized possession you had, Xavier Leggett's first touchdown ball in the NFL, which is sitting in your office. Last Friday night, you were given another game ball. It was for your first win as a college head coach, your Mountaineers 34-11 winners against Charlotte. Where's that game ball going?
I don't know that. It's just hopefully it's the first of many. We got a talented team that I'm really excited to coach and humble to coach, and got a long way to go, but there's nothing like being 1-0, and there's nothing like a celebrated locker room after the game.
A.J. Swan started at quarterback, 368 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks. But stats are one thing. Seeing it on the sideline, I'm sure, is another in real time. Then there's the eye in the sky, which, as we know, sees all and it doesn't lie. When watching back at his night, what were you most impressed by with A.J.?
No, the thing I was most impressed with AJ is he ran the offense efficiently, and that's through the camp. Like when we were waiting to name a starter, that's what we were looking for, is someone just to run the offense efficiently. And he did. He took care of the ball. He was aggressive in the timing of the play. He took his shots when he needed to take his shots. He showed toughness standing in the pocket. We do a lot of check with me stuff, and he's got a lot of responsibility at the line of scrimmage, and he did a really good job handling that stuff as well.
In practice, how much more difficult is it to, you know, track how it's going to translate to a game, your ability to run the offense efficiently? I guess, how much is it still, let's see what it looks like when the lights turn on?
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the messages we gave the team was survive the assault, work the cut. We knew that it was going to be a highly emotional game to start, just because we haven't played a football game. It was the first one. There's no preseason in college football. Mm-hmm. So the emotion was high. The app fans showed up, and when we took the field, it was a bunch of black and gold in the stands, and you could hear the guys talking about it. And I knew that early on they'd be juiced up, and they'd be just trying to do too much instead of just do their jobs. And I knew eventually we'd settle down and play football. But we make practice really, really hard around here. And I kept telling the quarterbacks, I'm like, guys, this is what I want from you. I heard it from Sellers. I heard it from Rattler. The games were easy because they don't have the little guy yelling at them the whole practice, pressing them. And AJ said after the game, walks up and goes, hey, the game was a lot easier than practice. Like, you were nice to me the whole time, and it was easier, and it slowed down. But it's by design that we're really hard on you in practice, so the games are easier.
Dabo Swinney made headlines yesterday when he was talking about how difficult it is to play well in week one. He said, we lost to LSU. They were better than us. But if you were grading on a test, it's like getting an exam. I think his exact quote, getting an exam on the first day of class. They maybe scored a 65 and we scored a 58. When you watched, 34-11 win, how well did you feel you guys played for an opener?
Well, at the end of the day, this is a production business, and it's like goes back to Gladiator. It's either there or there. And our guys played well enough to win. And there's so much improvement that needs to be made. And it could have been, in my opinion, 48-3. if we just do what we're trained to do. And so we got the awesome thing is we had to coach them really, really hard this week because they've experienced some success. They know they're in great shape. They know that they built a little confidence for those guys because a team really shows you who it is. It shows itself who it is on the field. And they got to go figure out, hey, are we good? Are we not good? Everything we've been working for, is it going to show up? Are our coaches going to put us in good positions? Are they not going to put us in good positions? And so for those guys, you got to build confidence. You got to – Matt Asbeck told me this. I tell this story all the time. Yeah, when you take over a program, you got to win as you build. And there's no, hey, it's a rebuilding year. It's a what have you done for me lately sport. And profession. So we needed that win and we're excited about it. And we got a great opportunity to get better because we need to have a really good week of practice this week because we didn't play our best.
App State coach Dal Loggins is with us here. Let's call this portion of the interview. Let's turn this portion of the interview into a coaching clinic. And you can tell us how a coach views things. Do you feel you need to coach your team with college kids harder after a win than versus a loss?
I think each team's differently. Each team's different. I think that you can coach guys after wins. I think they accept criticism a little bit more. When you lose, there's a fine line of, you got to be all in it together. And it can't be a coach versus a player. It's all of us have to own our mistakes and be accountable. And you want to create the atmosphere where every game's a championship atmosphere. It doesn't matter if you're playing Lindenwood or Charlotte. Like, the game you're playing is the most important game of the season. And then when you create that kind of accountability, then you're able to coach guys hard because they know where you're coming from. And when someone knows where you're coming from, they're going to take criticism or praise the right way. And it's, you got to treat each play like it has a life and history of itself. And we're in the process of kind of learning each other. And we're 1-0. And we have a chance to get to 2-0, which we haven't done around here since 2019. And so this game is really, really important for us. And we need to have a really good practice today because the only way you win and the only way you play well is to have great practices.
Let's make it situational in terms of this coaching clinic we have here. In the first half, wide receiver Jaden Barnes makes an incredible catch, but then he eases up, walking into the end zone, unbeknownst to Jaden, a DB comes in and punches it out from behind. It's a touchback. How much differently do you handle that teaching moment on the sideline in real time with Jaden versus after the fact in meetings?
Well, in real time, you got to try to take as much emotion out of it as you can, which is really hard because in that moment, it's a touchdown pass. And A.J. underthrew the ball a little bit. If he puts it out, Barnesy smoked the safety. I mean, we got the matchup we wanted. We had Barnes on the safety, and he ran by him. It's slightly underthrown. So then Barnesy has to go climb the ladder to go up and get that thing and make a contested catch. And then it's about finish. It's about finish through the line and doing things the right way. And so when he comes to sideline, you're heated. I mean, as a coach, like, you're mad. I mean, that's a bad football play. And we could talk about situational masters, and we talk about anti-situational masters, and that was an ASM. But now it's about how you respond, and it's about the next play. And Barnesy he came right over to me and goes, "Hey, coach, I love you. I know I made it. That was selfish. I know I made a mistake." So at that point, I have to control my own emotions and not be mad at him because he responded the right way. He goes down later and scores. And that's what you want to see from people. And he makes a great catch because the ball's thrown a little bit behind him, and he goes up across the middle, and he's fearless and makes a play. And that's what you want to see. Like, you don't want repeat offenders. And it's a lesson we all need to learn. And we have a situational masters meeting every Friday where we show those type plays. So then you got to look at yourself as a coach. Like, hey, maybe I need to be a little bit harder on this situation. Maybe they didn't understand it. Maybe – you got to look in the mirror and say, hey, we got to put them in every situation possible, because if it's the first time they're doing it, there's a good chance they're not going to succeed and it's not going to be successful as you'd like it to be. So you look at everything, but it's a great teaching moment for all of us. It's definitely easier to do it in a win than it is a loss. But like, we want to be, process based and not production based. So we got to get those things cleaned up and eliminate the things that hurt us.
To your credit, stripping the emotion out of it, that you might just be tempted, like, I'll go off on the kid, but, well, you need him, and he scored a touchdown for you, 6 catches, 135 yards. But since he responded the right way, is that something you even bring up in practice or in meetings during the week?
Absolutely, yeah. We the Monday after the game, like we had a Saturday, they were off. Sunday, they come in and have a voluntary lift. And Monday, we're back at it. We do a good, bad, ugly tape. And on the ugly part of it, we showed it. And it's because everyone needs to learn from it. But they also need to know how he responded. So you show that play so everyone learns from it. And you show the next play where he scores a touchdown. And these kids today, they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. And I can promise you, no one hurt more after that play than Barnsey. Like, Jaden was down on himself on that. And you worry about kids in today, like, how resilient are they going to be? How can they control their own minds? Can they go back out there and compete? And that's what Barnsey did. And so it's also a lesson to how you respond the right way, because life's hard. And we talked about that all the time. Like, you can't control your circumstance. You live in vision or circumstance. So do you want to be a great player that competes every snap and can respond when things don't go well, versus like feel sorry for yourself and pout because 80% of the world doesn't care that you did that and 20% of the world is glad you did it?
Dow Loggins is with us here, App State hosting Lindenwood this week. It is your first game day experience at The Rock coming up this week. Speaking of which, all the App State fans are going to be in the building. Have you already had a chance to connect with App superfan Luke Combs?
We have not yet. I mean, I was jamming his music on my little Bose device over here, and then I got my players texting me after the game saying, "Coach, how can we get Luke Combs here?" And I said, "Just keep winning, keep winning." All right, but you know, he's busy too, and we've talked to his manager, and we send him their gear every year and those things, but hadn't had a chance to connect with Luke yet.
Both long neck beers and App State did not break Luke Combs' heart over the weekend. Because you have such a rich history in the NFL working alongside players everybody would know, I do like the idea, kind of like with Leggett last time, picking a different guy each week we visit with you, or each time we visit with you, and seeing what stories you could share with us. Today I learned, I did not know this until now, that you were Johnny Manziel's quarterback coach his rookie year in Cleveland. What do you remember most about the media circus surrounding that and trying to help Johnny block that out once he got on the field and in the meeting rooms?
I mean, how long is our show?
However long you want it to be.
I'm going to have to cancel practice if we're going down this path. I love Johnny. Still to this day, I love Johnny. And he's grown up a lot and understands the mistakes he made. And we all saw the mistakes that the organization made. And it was unique, unfiltered, we were all very exposed in the process as well, as far as just the media attention it got, the eye, on it. And it was, we spent 1 year in Cleveland and went to Chicago after that, but we started off 5-2. We were first place in the division. We played a Thursday night game and we beat Cincinnati, and, It was awesome, and Brian Hoyer was playing really well for us. And then, the whole I'll say this. I'm going to sum it up this way. Every day, carnival or crisis.
That reminds me. Steve Logan's a friend, and he was the quarterback coach in San Francisco when the entire Colin Kaepernick situation was happening. And I said, "What was that like?" And he said, "Wasn't bad, brother, because once he got in the room, we didn't talk about that crap. We were talking about football." Was it difficult at all with a young player to just try to, "Hey, we're in this building, we're in this room, let's focus on this"?
No, because we had a great room. I mean, you got to think, we had Brian Hoyer was our starter, Connor Shaw was one of our backups, and had him in Chicago as well, and he was really instrumental in talking me into going to South Carolina when I made the move from Arkansas, because at first my answer was I was leaning towards no and not going there. I had some other opportunities and just concerned about the program, and Connor and Alshon were guys that, helped recruit me to go there. So, but once you get in the meeting rooms, it's about ball and it's about football. And we had a great staff. It was myself and Kyle Shanahan and Mike McDaniel, and really enjoyed working with those guys. And we didn't win as much as we wanted to. And fortunately for us, at the end of the year, we were all able to go other places and have success.
Man, Connor Shaw, Jadeveon Clowney, Lattimore, Alshon Jeffery, they had some good players at that time.
Great players.
Dow Loggins, you got some great players. This week, Lindenwood, best of luck. Congrats on the win, and thanks for making the time for us as always.
Appreciate you guys.
Appreciate you as well. There goes Dow Loggins. WD, We transition from that to playing one of our favorite weekly games. WD horribly guesses point spreads for this week. Guessing the lines next.
There are a lot of so-called sports talk guys who don't do anything but flap their gums.
Yeah, exactly.
But not Josh Graham. He doesn't even like gum or flapping for that matter.
He's so talented.
You're on The Drive with Josh Graham.
Honestly, don't remember the beginning of this song. It's when it pops in the chorus that you remember Up Where We Belong is maybe the greatest movie score ever. Okay, maybe not that far. But in terms of a number one hit, choosing the right song to be in your movie and to close your movie, Officer and a Gentleman and its association with this song, Will Dalton, disappointed in you. You gotta get to the thank you. If you were gonna play this song without getting to the chorus, where we're picturing Richard Gere carrying Deborah Winger out of wherever she was working, that mill, I was going to fight you in the street outside on Providence Lane here in Winston. You might be confused if you've listened to this show for the first time. Thank you, WD. That's enough. You might be thinking, wait, doesn't football kick off tomorrow? Why is he talking about a movie that came out 43 years ago? Well, what we do around here is make Will Dalton watch movies he hasn't seen before. And Officer and a Gentleman happened to be the movie that won the poll last week. And we'll get back to football momentarily, but we talk movies on this program. By the way, make sure you vote on the poll that we already have out there for next week. There's a new Leo DiCaprio, Paul Thomas Anderson movie coming out. So we have PTA and Leo movies up on the poll. Boogie Nights, Magnolia, Blood Diamond, and The Revenant, your choices. Boogie Nights, the early advantage in that poll. That would be an interesting movie to try to talk about on air. But that's not the movie this week. The movie this week, Officer and a Gentleman. Let's find out if Will liked it or not.
Unless you're talking about Star Wars,
Obi-Wan has taught you well.
Movies aren't exactly Will's thing.
I don't get it.
You uncultured swine!
But that's about to change because Josh can't stand it anymore. This is At the Movies with Will Dalton.
What you liked, what you didn't like, best quote, Rotten Tomatoes score. Those are the categories we have here. Will Dalton, did you like this movie? If so, what did you like?
I did like this movie. The first thing I liked about this movie as it got going was Sarge, the sergeant.
Well, Lou Gossett Jr. is the actor. I believe he actually won Best Supporting Actor. He won the Oscar for this performance. This was the best of Lou Gossett Jr., even though really good in a movie called Toy Soldiers that came out a few years after that. A young Sean Astin in it.
So I really liked him. I liked the watching kind of the back and forth between he and Richard Gere's character as the movie went on. And
mayonnaise.
But yeah, it was just...
You weren't surprised by the fact that he also happened to know karate and that was a culminating scene?
I wasn't expecting that, but...
This was an age where there are a lot of military movies. We've already done Stripes, which came out right around the same time.
Men.
Well, that's later. Talking like Boot Camp. I'm talking, we haven't done Full Metal Jacket, but that was an 80s movie as well. Don't know if that will appear in this segment at any point. That's a Stanley Kubrick movie.
But seeing the love story develop,
Private Benjamin was around this time.
I'm a sucker for, even though we don't do you know, romance movies all that much. I'm a sucker for them. Like, I like Titanic. I do.
Yeah. And on that note, this is the best of Richard Gere and Deborah Winger. I think Richard Gere has more to do in this than he has in Pretty Woman. I think he's probably most known for Pretty Woman. But the fact that he has the charm, the being cool, and also the physicality to do the course, the obstacle course, and all the other things required in this movie, that's impressive. Deborah Winger, you probably had never seen a movie with Deborah Winger before.
I had not. I
was Urban Cowboy, this movie, Terms of Endearment. That's quite a triple header in the same age. But, I mean, if you're just talking about Richard Gere and Deborah Winger, noteworthy love scene in this movie that is iconic. The terrific ending where you're literally sweeping Deborah Winger off of her feet.
And then it
goes apparently, they didn't get along on set, those two.
Really?
Yeah. Volatile people, Richard Gere and Deborah Winger. What didn't you like about this movie?
The blonde girl sucks.
Wait, what was her name again? Was it Annette? What was her name? Paula's friend? You're supposed to be taking these notes as well.
She was, let's see.
Did I get it right?
Who's the blonde?
What's her name? Her name was Lynette.
Lynette.
Yes.
The blonde girl is what I call her. And she was terrible, man.
Chasing pilots.
Yeah, like.
Well, here's the thing. He's not an angel either.
He's not, but the fact that when he goes.
Cheating on his wife.
I mean, yeah.
He's got a kid back home. Come on.
I get it, but just looking at it from her perspective, when he goes to propose.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, we're all thinking, okay, she's pregnant. She's got a kid on the way. Now, at first, I really didn't like her because I thought because there was numerous conversations in this movie about trapping these guys.
Yeah.
By getting pregnant.
I mean, the movie set you up for what was going to happen.
That's what I'm saying. And so at first, I thought that's what she had done, which I didn't like about her. But then when I realized, oh, she just faked it because she wanted to get with a pilot, and then she didn't want to be with him because he wasn't a pilot. Like, oh, you really suck.
I also think she's just a tremendous villain. That might be a thing I like about this movie, that she's really good. That last scene, or the scene with her, the last words Deborah Winger has for her when she walks out. I have written down here, I'm going to go with unnecessary nudity. The first 5 minutes of this movie are the exact opposite of the first 5 minutes of the movie Flight, where it's a lot of Robert Loggia. And I don't know exactly what's happening with him and his dad and the other people that are in that room.
That was a little confusing.
That's not great. But also, Sid hanging himself, spoiler alert, after what happened with Lynette.
They gotta see it.
Does he have to be fully naked?
No.
That didn't seem completely necessary
either.
Like, oh,
we gotta humiliate the guy even more.
So yeah. I just got unnecessary nudity written down for Officer and a Gentleman, what I didn't like about this classic. Okay. And also, it's a trope that people just randomly don't like military people in these small towns. Like, what's the deal where they're walking out of the bars like, what's up, military guy? Whoa, what's happening, Vietnam? Hey! I don't know why we need that. Who is that person? Who does that? Okay, because that also happens.
You nailed it on the beginning, though.
That also happens in Con Air. Like, why are they going after Nick Cage? This guy's like a military hero. Okay, best quotes.
I got nowhere else to go!
A lot of good yelling in this movie. Way to go, Paula!
How you doing, Sarge? Everything he said.
Only two things come out of Oklahoma. And then he just repurposes it at the end. Only two things come out of Arizona. Steers!
Be proud of them wings.
I want your D.O.R. Mayonnaise. Cigar. Okay, Rotten Tomatoes score. 1 out of 100. 100 being good. See if you can get within 5.
Let's go with an 82.
81.
Bam! Pow!
How closer on that than you are with sports betting lines. And that's been At the Movies with the WD.
Instead of just talking, why don't you listen? That's why you have people call in. Listen for a minute. Ah, welcome back to the Happy Circle.
The Drive with Josh Graham.
Last call for phone calls. Last call for voting. Will Dalton's movie next week. It seems like it's down to two options. Boogie Nights or Blood Diamond.
Oh, not Magnolia.
Yeah, that only has 5% of the vote, Will. More people like the Leo Bear movie, The Revenant, than that. So don't like your chances there. On X at Josh Graham Show and at WSJS Radio, you can chime in, vote on that poll. Darren Vaught, 15 minutes from now. The Carolina Panthers just wrapped up practice. Dave Canales meeting with reporters. This is in the last hour or so. There's some good news and there's some bad news. The good news is Tommy Tremble, not even on the injury report anymore. The Panthers produced their first injury report of the season. It's a positive development for him. Had the back surgery in the spring. He seems to be good to go. So you have your tandem of Tommy Tremble and JT Sanders week one against Jacksonville, as you hoped you'd have. Carolina has some problems on the offensive line, though. Last week, we thought Carolina was going to escape unscathed. Damian Lewis, he had some injuries a little bit at left guard, but we were told he's going to be good for the opener. The good news is he's not even listed on an injury report as well. He's fine. But then a week ago, we learned Ike Ekwonu had an emergency appendectomy. Not this previous Sunday, but the Sunday before. And he hasn't been on the field since. Canales, is it ruling Ike out for week one? The quote from Dave, the hopes that Ike can do a little more Friday. He mentioned hitting bags in order for us to see if he could be available Sunday. Translation, it's doubtful. If Ike hasn't been on a football field for a week and a half, and you're not even looking to see him fully practice on Friday, it's just do a little bit more, maybe hit some bags. You're not playing him week one. So get ready for Big Yosh to be at left tackle. Yosh Nyman, which isn't ideal when Trayvon Walker, the former number one overall pick, lines up on the other side with 10.5 sacks. But it gets worse. During practice today, per Canales, Robert Hunt tweaked his foot. Now, he returned to drills, so that's a good sign. Medical staff decided to then hold him out once they learned about his foot. Oh, Damian Lewis is still listed as limited, but he's going to be fine. Shoulder / ankle. The real concern is Ike Ekwonu and Robert Hunt. This was supposed to be a strength for the Panthers, and we're looking at some attrition right out of the gate. David Tepper was out at practice today with Dan Morgan, Dave Canales, chopping it up. Hadn't seen a lot of Dave. Dave Tepper.
With concerts.
During the preseason so far. Don't think Panther fans have great issues with the fact that we hadn't seen a lot of Tepper out at practice. So those are some of the updates to bring to you. Broadcast team announced. Chris Myers, Mark Schlereth will be the booth for the Panthers game on Fox on Sunday, a 1 o'clock kick. Travis Hunter is listed as the first team wide receiver, second team DB, which runs counter to what we thought even last week. So when we say this is a tricky scout, we don't know what Jacksonville's going to do with Travis Hunter, we mean it. New coaching staff, new head coach, new coordinators, and a new commercial. Did you see Trevor Lawrence and Travis Hunter in the newest commercial that just came out? No, not a Heisman commercial.
No, I didn't see that.
It's them just having the best of times, Will. See if you could pull that up. Trevor Lawrence, Travis Hunter, having a terrific time. It's an Adidas ad where they are just best friends yucking it up. Number one overall pick in Trevor Lawrence, key year for him, and a number two pick in Travis Hunter. Let me know if you see it and if you got it. Then we'll move on to North Carolina. But those two, somebody pointed out, in none of these clips is Travis Hunter playing DB. Yeah, let's break down the tape. Let's break down the commercial tape. Here we go. Okay, so they're sitting on the stands together. Now they're in a cart together. They're working out together, watching film together. Travis Hunter backflip, more dancing. Good song choice. Oh, side bump. They're best friends, Will.
See that.
That looks like the janitor from Rudy. That might actually be who that is. And then at the very end, they're in full uniform, running out of the tunnel together. 16 and 12. There you go. See that, Will? Travis Hunter, Trevor Lawrence. The vibes are good. We need to make a call on this movie. That's what we need to do. Boogie Nights. We'll wait a little longer. We'll add some more suspense. Let's first get to Hubert Davis. Hubert Davis laid out the vision for North Carolina basketball in 25-26 when meeting with the media yesterday. Perfect timing, by the way. Hey, how soon is basketball season? After the disastrous loss to TCU in football, Chapel Bill's debut? Well, if you want to talk basketball, here's Hubert Davis the day after the game. Meeting with the media, about a half hour availability inside the Smith Center. And here's what we learned. This is their vision. Seth Trimble is expected to be the leader. He is the four-year player with institutional knowledge of the program, institutional knowledge of how Hubert Davis operates, now entering year five somehow. And he's stepping into the R.J. Davis role. He's stepping into the Armando Bacot role.
Armando.
So here was Hubert with high praise for Seth Trimble.
You know, he's an ambassador for this program. He really is. You know, I mean, for him to be here 4 years, he's done a lot. He's seen a lot. One of the things that's really important to Seth is not only for Carolina to be good, but for Carolina to be good, you know, when he leaves. And this place means something to him. And the way that he leads and the way that he carries himself every day puts our program in a position to be successful.
So Seth Trimble is your starting two guard, one of the ACC's best perimeter defenders, and the one ACC basketball player that owns an ice cream shop. Owns a Baskin Robbins. Oh, wait. Ben and Jerry's.
There you go.
On Franklin Street. Got to get it right. As an inverse of last season, where the lack of size for Carolina was such an issue, this Tar Heel team is going to go as far as its post takes them. See if you agree with this. Henry Vassar and Caleb Wilson should be the two best players on this team. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Henry Vassar was the biggest add in the portal from Arizona, 7-footer. You bring him in for his experience. You bring him in for his defense. Blocking shots, of course, but Hubert even made a point to say it's not just blocking shots, it's altering shots as well. It's really going to help us with rebounding, which was a problem a year ago. And Caleb Wilson is a lottery-level talent. North Carolina has not had a ton of lottery picks in recent years. Caleb Wilson could be one of those guys. And don't forget, Alabama transfer Jaren Stevenson is coming home, the Chapel Hill native. So a lot of talent in the post. The X factor of this team, though, is international transfer Luka Bogovac. In other words, North Carolina should be a tournament team regardless. But if they're going to be a team that's ranked in the top 25 the entire season and closer to the top 10 than they are being out of the top 25, it's going to be because Luka Bogovac hits. If he doesn't, you're better than you were a year ago, but not enough that people feel good about Hubert Davis and the direction of the program. Luka, he was Carolina's plan C on the wing. They wanted to bring Drake Powell back, but Drake Powell left to the draft was a first-round draft pick. They did not land Andre Stojakovic from Cal. They were in a battle with Illinois, and Illinois ended up winning it. So Luka, it took a lot to get him to the States. Once he finally got here, there was a play in practice that's gone viral on social media. WD, roll tape for those watching rather than just listening. Where he grabs a rebound off a miss, behind the back dribble over the center court logo at the Smith Center, pull up three bottom. Looks pretty good. Wearing number 44. If he's good, then that starting lineup is scary. It's, okay, you got Kyan Evans and Seth Trimble in the backcourt, Luka Bogovac at the three that you have to worry about, and then those two bigs that are your two best players. But if Luka Bogovac isn't what they hope he is, then you look at that lineup, you're like, all right, you got a good post, but then Seth Trimble, is that your best shooter in the backcourt? And Kyan Evans, okay, for Colorado State, and what do you have here with this Montenegro transfer, international transfer, in Bogovac? Lance writes in, Graham Cracker. May not be the best player, but Luka seems likely to be the leading scorer. I don't know. Maybe. Or maybe it's Kyan, or maybe it's Seth Trimble who's the leading scorer. This team does have more depth. Jonathan Powell is going to bring some defense from West Virginia, a really good shooter. And we mentioned Jaron Stevenson off the bench. We mentioned, or we haven't mentioned yet, but Jaden Young, pride of Greensboro, he's going to be playing for the Tar Heels too, transferring in for Virginia Tech. But that's your vision. Don't know if it's all going to shake out the way North Carolina plans, but that is their plan, the vision for this team. Will Dalton, we need to pick out your movie. Boogie Nights has 40% of the poll.
Let's do it.
I don't know how we're going to do it next week, but Boogie Nights is the movie. Yeah. Darren Vaught answers unusual questions with us next. Darren Vaught! You slapping the bass, or are you playing the guitar there for those watching on YouTube, Twitch, and X? Turn down the music when Darren's talking. He's getting drowned out, Will.
The music was just that good.
Was it? I don't know.
I mean, you were jamming to it.
Have you ever seen I Love You, Man?
Is that a movie?
Just hit the button.
Well.
Slapping the bass. D1 Baseball. Let me give you a proper introduction. ACC Baseball, etc. D1 Baseball. Darren Vaught. I'll let you choose your own adventure. Usually, we allot for this segment to be baseball discussion. It is pennant race time. I've got an Oriole jersey on. They just took two in a row against the Padres. No big deal. Truthfully.
Baseball.
No big deal. Do you want to talk about baseball? Is there a favorite storyline in baseball you want to talk about? Or do you want to pick from the fruit that everybody else seems to want to pick from? Brooke Pryor is as busy as anybody the week the NFL starting, but wanted to come on the show in order to vent about North Carolina. Everybody seems to have some interest, some angle to Bill Belichick's disastrous loss on Monday night. So this is me being kind to you, Darren, in allowing you to choose your own adventure.
Yeah, okay. I like this. I used to have, there was a particular Goosebumps Choose Your Own Adventure book that I have just like a very specific memory of. There was this like killer alligator on the front of it, and it was like this holographic gold in color.
I never read the Goosebumps books, but this would be a good unusual question, which we'll get to a little bit. Like, what books did you get from the book fair, most notably in elementary school? Or, you know, I think about Artemis Fowl, I remember picking up, and You know,
Bailey's
Captain
School Kids or like the Magic Treehouse books. Did yes. you guys into those?
Yes. Captain so, like, Underpants are, when I was younger.
There are those core books that you just like, you mention books that you read as a kid just as a concept. And I picture that Choose Your Own Adventure Goosebumps book with the crazy killer alligator and the shiny gold. And I remember sitting in a laundromat reading it.
It's a great way to tease unusual questions, but yeah. this doesn't right. sound so, like the adventure you wanted to choose.
No. So to choose my own adventure, if I may, I'll get one baseball thing in quickly. And that is to plug ACC baseball, et cetera, because last week, Jared Saltalamacchia, a New England legend, making his ACC coaching debut. And again, an ACC or a New England legend making their ACC coaching debut. It kind of aligns with talking about Bill Belichick here. Salty is a new assistant at Miami as of this fall.
By the way, while he's talking about this, Will, you should be pulling the Imagine Dragons drop because
he is.
Jared Saltalamacchia is definitely that. Just
because he is. There it is.
I could have pressed the button where I talked to you where the audience couldn't hear and I didn't interrupt Darren, but.
No matter.
We're
no
just
matter.
Letting this
Anyways,
all.
Anyways, Jared Saltalamacchia, the latest guest on ACC Baseball, etc. Would love if you check that out, part of the D1 Baseball Podcast Network. Your guy, Andrew Abbott, formerly of Virginia, of the Cincinnati Reds, is going to join us in the next couple of weeks.
Whoa! Make sure you talk about South Boston.
I will. So I got to know him with the Collegiate National Team. Anyways, we'll get to that. You can find it, subscribe, you'll get that too. But appreciate that. With Bill, I was fascinated because, you know, I'm not in ACC football like that. I cover football. I call football. I know Jordan Shipp pretty well because I covered him in high school, the number one receiver on North Carolina's team. So I was interested for a number of reasons, like anybody else. So I watched the game and I was just fascinated by the buildup. And even on that first drive, it was like a feature film when they scored that first touchdown, because it was like from shot to shot with nothing in between. It was touchdown is scored. Cut to that suite where it's Michael Jordan, Roy Williams, and LT yucking it up in the same room. The very next shot was Jordan Hudson over in another suite area with like her hands on the rails, watching over everything with just simply a smirk, like she's a supervillain or something. And then right over her shoulder, Randy Moss is celebrating. Like, and then they go down from that shot to Bill, and you know, like college football stadiums have now.
Stone face.
Yeah. Oh, God. I mean, he was stone faced, but there's the light show going on. You see players jumping around and celebrating back behind him like it was the Super Bowl. And it's like, it's the first drive of the season. It's wild that happened, because that seemed like a fever dream. And then the rest of the game happened, which was the total opposite. It was crazy.
Darren Vaught, we need to get to unusual questions. Let's do that.
But last week, guys, everybody made it out that I got mad at Josh and I left the press conference. That's not right. I thought it was an unusual question, and it's okay.
It's time for Unusual Questions with Josh Graham.
I'll get us started. Darren Vaught with us. Unusual questions. We answer them. We ask them of each other. The Carolina Hurricanes released their new road jersey today. This leads to a very difficult, broad question to answer. What is your favorite jersey in sports?
Ooh.
Now, maybe we do this step by step, process of elimination. Do you prefer, what is the best type of jersey? Sweater and hockey, baseball jersey, such as I have on right now, football jersey, basketball, casual wear. This would help us get to what category you want to break things down into. where does your head go first? Like, where did your brain take you when that question was asked?
Well, I immediately started thinking of like color schemes that I enjoy.
Ah,
right. So at my high school rocked orange and black. I've always been kind of favorable toward orange and black.
I'm not going to let Will answer this question because I already know what he's going to say.
Oh, it's the pinstripes and the Yankees.
I mean, it is, but I can come up with something else.
Well, I mean, I think that's a good point to make because, like, okay, there are good uniforms that we like because they are cool designs. And then there are just, like, classically good uniforms, right? Like, classic uniforms, iconic uniforms. The Yankees are there.
Powder blue, L.A. Chargers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like the 49ers.
The Mariners.
Like, that's a classic uniform.
Mariners have probably the best colors in baseball, but I love the red, white, and blue with pinstripe Chicago Cub home uniform. Yeah. Notre Dame, Alabama. See, when I think college football, I think more helmets than I think jersey. Like, who has the best helmets? And that's what we're talking about here. We're talking about jerseys.
Funny enough, I mean, but see, also, are we talking about uniforms?
Nope, I said jerseys.
You said jerseys.
Because that's what the news today was. It's jerseys.
I think,
because if we're doing college football, maybe Ohio State, just how, but I think college football jerseys are just so basic. It's about the tradition. Chicago Blackhawks hockey jersey needs to be in the conversation in terms of iconic. The Duke home basketball jersey is pretty good with Duke across the front like that.
So I'm going to bring college baseball into it. It is a popular opinion that North Carolina has the best jerseys in college baseball. I think that's a fair point.
Yeah.
I think LSU in baseball has some pretty iconic jerseys.
I don't hate the gray Tennessees. The gray jerseys, baseball, Tennessee.
Oh.
Like the charcoal almost looking color.
Sure, yeah.
I don't hate those. I mean,
again, that's sort of what I was talking about. That's the differentiation I was making earlier, right? Like, that's a cool looking uniform, whereas I don't know if it is just like a good jersey in the sense that others might be a good jersey.
I don't think any of the NFL jerseys are great. Except powder blue Charger jersey. I think that's just far and away the answer.
What about
Cowboy? White Cowboy jersey?
See, okay, I love, and again, I grew up in a Cowboys household, so this is a little bit of bias, maybe, but I love the old school Cowboys with the white helmet and the non-bordered star. And they're the navy uniforms with the white over the shoulders.
Thanksgiving home uniform.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so that was my unusual question. WD, would you like to ask one?
I would. So growing up, what was your favorite place to get a Happy Meal?
There's only one place to get a Happy Meal.
Because
McDonald's?
McDonald's had it. Now, different places had kids' meals. I guess McDonald's is the Happy Meal. But,
correct.
Okay, what's the best? Where did you
this
like
might
to get
be the worst question
Shut
you
up.
Ever asked.
What, this, where was the best place to get a kids' meal? Because Wendy's had...
Pause. Where's the best place to get a Happy Meal is amazing. It's kind of crazy because the second question I had written down was, where's the best place to get a Whopper? And I decided against it at the last minute. If it wasn't for the Canes news today, I probably would have asked the best place to get a Big Mac.
I mean, because listen, Wendy's had a good kids' meal.
What you're asking is,
Chick-fil-A,
kids' meal,
Burger
value
King,
meal.
Burger King had good kids' meals with the, you know, with the. Now you can factor in toys.
I think what you mean to get at is, what is the best place to get cheap food at?
No, I was specifically talking about a kids' meal. Like, where did you like to get a kids'
meal? The answer is McDonald's.
I don't know.
Although, let me say this. You guys remember the giveaways, the toys that they would have at Pizza Hut back in the day?
Mm-hmm.
Like the yes. King Griffey Jr. Bat. Like it was almost like a... It was like clear. You could see inside of it, but it was pumped up as a bat. Like that thing rocked.
You know, the best gift the best giveaway I ever remember was actually at Burger King, where I think they gave away in the year 2000 Backstreet Boys Millennium albums. Like I think they were giving those away. I think you had to pay a little extra, but it was certainly a lot cheaper than it would cost just to buy the album. And I think I got the Millennium Backstreet Boys album from a Burger King circa 2000. I think that happened. Yeah. It's larger than life. Darren, what's your unusual question?
Good
luck topping that one.
Yeah, good luck.
It is with Bill Belichick and the hubbub about his collegiate debut in mind.
I'm glad it wasn't centered on Jordan Hudson. I've had enough.
Sure. I get it. So in that sweet area where MJ, Roy, and LT were, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So envision, Josh, I don't know what the equivalent would be for you, but it's like, okay, you know, you're making some sort of big debut in your career.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, what would that booth look like for me? Cal Ripken, 2131 anniversary coming up on Sunday. Or Saturday of this week, at Cal Ripken's in a booth with Jim Palmer, and I don't know who the third is since Brooks, unfortunately, has passed away, and same thing for Frank. Brian Roberts is in that booth.
Because, like, there's a dream suite
yeah.
where it is perhaps people you don't know.
Oh, I got you.
But then, again, like, there's people you could maybe the question here is how star-studded could you make a suite at an event? Say, again, hypothetically, you were making your collegiate coaching debut.
Okay, yeah. So who would I invite to this booth? Okay, I got Steve Forbes hanging out in the booth.
Yep, done.
Steve Forbes is there.
May I make a suggestion?
Please.
Charles Barkley. Let's get him there.
I don't think I'd be able to pull that off.
That's not the question.
Talking about based on people who are in my phone or who I've interacted with? Is this the question?
I think we can suspend disbelief enough to just assume that if you have a connection with them and you want them there, you'll get them to show up.
Cowherd's
right?
like there. Cowherd's there.
That's gonna make it more fun. Yeah. Oh, dude, give me Steve Forbes, Charles Barkley, and Colin Cowherd in yours.
Boom.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, Cowherd, you can listen to him in about 20 minutes, not even 15 minutes. Cowherd. Boom. There's my booth. Will, who's in your booth? Aaron Boone definitely is in your booth.
Aaron Boone is in there.
BFFs, Tar Heel.
With a hoodie tied around his waist.
Yeah.
He's there.
Yankees fans mad at him because their biggest series of the year is coming up.
Aaron Boone's in there.
Last night,
so. I know Ian Eagle's in that booth.
Ian Eagle's in there.
Ian Eagle, every time I see him with or without Will, he will just not even say, what is he seeing? He'd be like, Kindergarten Cop, has he seen it? Like, that's what he'd be.
I'm trying to think who else have I run into that could Ian top
Eagle,
this off?
Aaron Boone.
Yeah.
I don't know who the third is. Darren, who's yours while WD thinks?
Ian probably would have been one of mine, so I'm going to replace him with Kevin Harlan.
Excellent.
Wow. So give me Harlan. See, it's funny. When I ask these questions, I rarely think about them beforehand.
Will Dalton's third is going to be Robert Walsh, just to see Aaron Boone, Ian Eagle, and Robert Walsh.
Can I get Robert in mine, too? I miss him.
Yeah.
that's an excellent threesome.
Give me Kevin Harlan, Tubby Smith.
Oh, that's great.
And Kyle Peterson in my suite.
I'd like that to be just a broadcast team. I don't know what...
Yeah, right?
Just get those three together.
Honestly, get them on a golf broadcast together. Because Tubby and KP, both really good golfers, And, you know, golf commentary could probably use a little Kevin Harlan to spice it up.
Yeah. If you're going to dinner, make sure you got steak on the menu, because that drop that we have is actually Kevin Harlan reacting to a memory 15 years ago where he had Angus Barn for the first time.
Wow.
Darren,
I love that guy.
It's a true story. Darren Vaught, D1 Baseball, ACC Baseball, etc. Jared Salitamakia.
Salitamakia.
Salitamakia. Oh, yeah. And also, there's this person, every time I say the word particularly, gets mad. Say I mispronounce it. Like, who's in the comments right now? Particularly. Particularly.
Nice.
Am I saying it wrong? Particularly.
Yes. You're switching the L and the R, much like you are switching the L and the T in Salitamakia, it sounds like.
Particularly?
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, got it.
That was it.
Darren, we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, see you guys.
Some people could be very particular. What do we got in Ticket to the House?
Find out why Chuck E. Cheese got arrested again.
Again? Next.